Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall.
I've always found forensic psychology fascinating. You know, trying to get inside the mind of a criminal to work things out. In today's story, the character attempts this. After Azaria, by Anne Penhalluric, 2004 Scarlet Stiletto winner for Police Procedural. There aren't too many choices when you try to second-guess a serial killer, particularly one whose choice of victims appears to be random, even after you've trawled through so much evidence and background information that you're more at home in the victims' lives than in your own. And it's no use falling back on comforting theories of evil, so deep they're irrational. Leave that nonsense to the journos. Instead, you have to decide between two options, at least as the basis for your pursuit. You ask, is the link between the killings the mode of death? A ritual so intense and fulfilling, it doesn't matter who is killed. Or is there a connection, as yet hidden, secret, between the victims, a link only the killer thinks is there, which appears to give reason and permission? The two options are like two shades of lipstick, both blood red. They're also the essence of solving the crime. I went to Uluru, to the heat-throbbing centre of the continent, to explore the first option, a serial killer who might be hooked on ritual, who might kill again, soon. Carter? Ray Nolans rang my inner city, two up, two down, late on the 31st of October. I've got a job for you. Halloween joke? I asked. Ray and I worked together years back, worked well, but he's wary. I'm still scoring kudos for solving the case that nearly sent him to what he calls a shrink. A case with three mutilated bodies, no sexual involvement, no other apparent motive, almost no evidence at the scenes. There was story, though, in the way the killer murdered, a lust for power which gave him away in the end.
Ah, plenty of pumpkin heads up here without bloody Halloween, I can tell you. Ray replied.
Now listen, Annabelle. My wife's just had plastic on the upper parts and my pension fund's chockers. I'll retire a happy man long as we can sort this arsehole of a case.
Ray had been married for 30 years, so I figured he was joking about his wife. Marcia's a great woman, and I was pleased he turned to me. Forensic psychologists aren't everyone's favourite fact finders. Oh, which case? I was truly puzzled. I hadn't had a whiff of another serial in the Northern Territory.
How would you feel about five murders? Over 6 years, all the victims found crushed at the base of Ayers Rock, or Uluru, as you'd probably call it.
Whew, I swore to myself, 5 in 6 years at the Rock? And the media don't know?
Well, I of course could see why the police would want to keep it quiet, would have to keep it quiet. Ever since the Azaria Chamberlain case, murder at
Uluru had been a hypersensitive issue. In that case, a baby disappeared. The mother called, "A dingo's got my baby." Popular opinion screamed, "Infanticide." The corpse was never found and the mother was convicted. The territory police got more international coverage than if they'd won the World Cup. But eventually, Lindy Chamberlain's conviction was quashed. The police and prosecution had used dud evidence. "Oh, the media ain't going to hear about it," answered Ray. "Not ever if we can help it. But that doesn't mean you should jump to any bloody conclusions. The past is the past." I began to ask more questions, but Ray interrupted, which surprised me. He's generally polite, and sometimes too polite. "Can you be on tomorrow's plane? Leaves around lunchtime. I don't want to talk over the phone. I can fax a few details." There was no point in arguing. If Ray had a set about being overheard, he would have good reasons. Reasons I was eager to find out. And there was no point in playing hard to get. Ray knows my forensic work doesn't buy me any more than cheap bread and butter, but to me, it's not a job. It's my gamble, my drug. It's what drives me. Midday Wednesday, I was on a plane flying into a fierce headwind en route to the Alice, the town nearest to the centre of the oldest landmass on Earth. I couldn't help but feel I was heading into territory that played by rules more mystical than rational, which was what half the world claimed after Azaria, but which was, for someone like me who loves logic, a little unusual. On the plane, I reviewed my brief. Straightforward enough, work out why some bastard would seek satisfaction or thrill or relief in pushing 5 people from the top of a 1,000-foot-high monolith. If the victims were truly unrelated, part of the excitement must be the voyeurism of watching the bodies blistering down the life-taking near-vertical rock wall. The killer might well pant at the sound of their screams and orgasm as they land, battered beyond recognition in a pool at the base of a rock that Aboriginal people regard as sacred. The steward handed me a cardboard box, a sandwich still cold from storage, a miniature chocolate bar, which I ate first, and a plastic container of spring water. I dreamt briefly of the day I'd be flying business class. Now, what did I know about the victims? 5 people aged between 18 and 62, both genders, one Greek Australian, one Scot, settled here for 4 decades, and 3 Aussies with genetic histories like a squashed pack of Arnott's assorted biscuits. No Indigenous Australians, no children or babies. A variety of jobs. Victims from different states whose only conjunction under the stars was their apparently unexpected, inexplicable, and terribly painful death. The temperature on the tarmac at Alice was beyond my comprehension. The last time I'd been here, it was winter, and that was hot enough. I'm small, and I like to think strong. A decade of lifting weights, long runs, longer uphill hikes in the harsh terrain of the Blue Mountains, nights, and the odd precious morning of lust, nothing had made me sweat like this. What my mother calls perspiration, if she ever mentions it, spurts from me like water being pumped from the great artesian basin. I collected the hire car, 4-wheel drive, high clearance, big engine, chips out of the windscreen, a certain gritty reality to it, and I felt Ray beside me as I zapped open the doors. "Good to see you," he said, looking like he meant it. He climbed into the passenger seat, grinning at my raised eyebrows. "Our constable dropped me out here. Thought we should have a yarn before you meet Heinrich." Michael Heinrich is now the detective in charge of the investigation. He was brought in from Darwin when it was finally realised that 4 accidental deaths on or around the same date, the summer solstice, 4 years running, all bodies found at the same sacred waterhole were getting beyond chance. None of the deaths was witnessed. Then nothing the following year. And now one more. Same place, same MO, but out of sync time-wise. This one was in August. In fact, on the date, Azaria had disappeared. Heinrich's original report had been tough on the Alice police, but he'd done a little better himself, so he had a few chips on the shoulder to fry. So Heinrich's theory held no water? Couldn't you find an indigenous person angry enough at the invasion of their sacred land to kill? I asked as we hit the highway. The traditional owners have maintained for years that the rock climb should be closed for spiritual reasons rather than safety, and there was plenty of anger out there. Ah, oh, come on, you know as well as I do that Aborigines have always been too bloody kind to their invaders, and most of them would wrestle with Arnie Schwarzenegger than take on the spirits at Uluru. Anyway, nothing holds water around here, mate. Look around, just rocks, big rocks, small rocks, sand, red, yellow or bleached, just like the hair on your head, young Annabelle. I didn't mind the remark about my hair. A, because I like it to look seriously bleached, and B, because Ray has that old-fashioned courtesy that city men seem to have thrown out with the ability to change a car tyre. Well, it has to be someone who knows the rock well, though, then, I questioned. Mate, it's like there's a big red X marks the spot 1,000 feet up from Maggie Spring. They had to go over in exactly the same position. That puts the rangers in the frame just as much as the locals. Okay, so let's hear your theory. The obvious is that the date's the significant thing, yeah? The solstice always attracts a few baggy-trousered spiritual types, but maybe it's the only time of the year the asshole gets off work. Yeah, which might give us a hint of what he does for a job, a workplace that closes the week before Christmas. I liked the direction Ray was going. A midsummer sacrifice seemed far too simplistic. A road train settled itself on my back bumper bar, making the big car suddenly feel fragile. Ray checked the left side mirror. Idiot, he remarked before returning to his topic. So I've done a bit of sifting. You know that one consortium owns most of the hotel beds in the territory? Well, they're not too willing to give over info, but Marcia works with a girl who's got a bit of influence. Got hold of a list of guests who'd been here more than once. Another list of workers who'd been around for a few years. Heinrich hadn't checked this? Cursory. He still convinced it's someone local. Was there any way they could have been murdered and carried up the rock? Ah, you'll see the pathology reports when we get in. We're not sure with two of them what bloody killed them. The bodies were so smashed, those clever dicks can't be sure whether the jugular was cut by a blunt knife or a sharp stone on the way down. The road train, four petrol tankers swaying and shimmering in the heat, was clinging to our rear like it might swallow us up at any moment. It was beginning to make me queasy. This the usual way of welcoming visitors around here? I asked, nodding my head at the rearview mirror. Nah, Ray responded slowly. Just curious. Maybe I'll ring through, though, check the plates. We were entering Alice now, the slow sweep of colour-bond-clad suburbs. Not many wooden buildings around here. I let Ray make the call and wondered why he was bothering. He'd left basic copper duties behind 20 years back and there didn't seem any other reason to worry about a bad driver. Was all he said when he'd got the reply. Scribbled something in his notebook. Anything else I should know? Yeah. You thought I was hard to work with. Well, Heinrich looks like he comes out of some women's magazine, but it's all surface. He'll hone in on you for sure, being an attractive young woman, so watch him and watch your back. The next 2 days I spent closeted in the air-conditioned police building. 3 of the bodies had been exhumed and re-autopsied when the stab wound on the 4th was noticed. Pics were pretty vile. I was glad I hadn't sat through the autopsies. Interviews with the poor buggers who'd found the bodies weren't very revealing. No forensics to speak of, either top or bottom of the rock. Literally impossible to inspect the sheer 400 metres of the fall. On the 3rd morning, I searched for a coffee shop. I only drink 1 cup a day and I like that to be stronger than the French Foreign Legion on full pay. The tourist trade in Alice is huge, so there's a surfeit of cafes. I chose one with haphazard decor and a pile of newspapers. The smell of it proclaimed coffee, which was strong and unburnt. I picked up a Northern Territory News, the national and southern papers arrive on the first plane in at lunchtime, and I found myself an outside seat. There's always a chance of overhearing something useful. As I stirred sugar into the coffee, a shadow dropped the temperature about 10 degrees. "Good morning," Michael Heinrich said, seating himself without asking. I paused. I'm not a great morning person, and I hadn't taken to Heinrich. On the other hand, my job is get inside the head of a killer, and I needed to access all of the evidence, possible leads the police can supply. "Michael, what are you doing here?" I kept my voice polite. "Looking for you." Ray's right. Heinrich's a good-looking bastard. Tanned, muscular, his hair cut smart enough to be Lygon Street or Paddington, so the looking for you line is destined to work on most women, and some men. "Is there more information I should have before I go down to Uluru?" I was keeping it professional. He opened his backpack. He's plain clothes and adopts a sort of upmarket park ranger look. "I thought you might appreciate these." I whistled. Photos of the victims, as near as possible to the date of death and years before, moments from their lives, personality shots. I looked at Heinrich, hoping he'd think the narrowing of my eyes was due to the searing heat. Not many police would have realised how useful these photos might be. "Thanks. But I thought you were convinced this was a ritual. The targets themselves weren't important." Heinrich went slightly red under the tan. Or did he? Was he just a good actor? "Listening to you and Ray yesterday made me rethink that theory," he said. "The repetitive use of such an extravagant place, the precise sighting of the bodies in the waterhole, which is supposed to be like a well of life, and the solstice timing do seem to indicate a need on the killer's part to have these aspects complete in his own schema. On the other hand, perhaps Ray's right and it's all a little too obvious." "So you did psych at uni?" This time the blush seemed real. "Did I sound pompous?" "No, it was the word schema. Jargon for people putting things together in their heads according to their particular experience and set of values. Not conscious, necessarily." "Oh, a good way of explaining it. You're quick with words." Was this a discreet put-down? Oh, Michael was proving to be extremely clever. Every comment carried a double edge and potential danger. Ray had more than implied the guy's ambitions were causing problems. Nothing proven. Rumours that, on occasion, case notes seemed incomplete. Evidence perhaps stayed in his drawer. Like the photos, which I decided to take, putting my worries on hold. I appreciate the info. I've got to go now. It's 3 hours to the rock. Or maybe more. Look, Annabelle, why don't you wait until tomorrow? We could go through the photographs together and I can fill you in on some of the more personal background of the victims. And maybe we could have dinner. He sounded almost nervous. My cup clattered as I put it down. Oh, thanks all the same. I'll be away for a couple of days, perhaps when I get back. For some reason, I thought it best not to tell him that I had a meeting with an Aboriginal elder. Uluru, home of the Rainbow Serpent, scene of battles at the beginning of time, now the most visited rock in the whole bloody world. 500,000 people or more a year, each of whom could be the killer. And that's without the traditional people near the rock. Then there are the thousands of travellers and tired souls who staff the resorts, and all of the others in the communities and townships stretching way back to the Alice, which has the only nearest decent shopping centre 400 k's up the road. I was within 50 k's by lunchtime, the Land Cruiser and I having already developed a close relationship, although even with the V8 engine, it had taken an hour to shake off the road train that had tailed me out of Alice. Well, now I was relaxed, and it was hard to keep my eyes on the road. I passed Mount Connor, and the top of the rock itself reared through the passenger window and then just as dramatically disappeared, tantalising. I decided to go straight onto the viewing place I knew from last time I was in the territory. Behind me was another Land Cruiser. In sight, since the turn-off from the Lassiter Highway, perhaps my speed explained why it hadn't overtaken me. I put on my left indicator as if I were going into the resort town of Yulara. The cruiser slowed. I stepped on the gas, pushing myself past the speed limit with style. 30 seconds later, the cruiser was back. Shit. I pulled into the parking bay as near to the last minute as I could, not indicating. Behind me, the brakes squealed. The cruiser hesitated and drove past. Trouble was, there's basically only one road out here, so it wasn't going to be hard to find me. Putting what could be paranoia aside, I clambered out of the car and set my boots in the sand. There, as if it were proclaiming the centre of the world, was the rock. Still 15 k's away, but filling almost the entire landscape. Immense, solid, immutable, rising indomitably from the flatness. Childhood memories are stored in holes, glorious paintings rather than jigsaws with the potential for lost pieces and without the complex networks Heinrich had referred to as schemas. My theory about Uluru is that it's like the perfect childhood memory. Far, far beyond the ordinary and very, very whole. Words like grand and magical slip away, useless. It doesn't bring tears to the eyes. Instead, the breath is drawn in, a deep primeval echo within the body. Back in the car, I felt cleansed, which is pretty wild when you think about the amount of sand and grit I just shipped into the cruiser. I was beginning to understand why you'd think there was a religious significance behind the killings. I drove on, paid my park entry fees, forgot the receipt for my tax, thought about going to the murder site before my meeting, but decided on having my mind uncluttered. I don't go all misty-eyed about Indigenous culture, well, or any culture, come to that, like some of my friends do. But I'm very aware that the traditional owners will see the place and the events with a whole different mindset to mine. Heinrich's schemas again. Dorothy had asked to meet me at the cultural centre about 2 k's from Uluru itself. The centre attempts to be discreet, but it's a group of big tourists' shops and cafes, really. Still inside, it was comparatively cool and the flies were occasional rather than smothering. While I waited, I was early, I did a bit of people watching. Would our killer sit here like this, eyeing off a likely candidate? Did he, well, the likelihood of it being a woman was slimmer than a Vogue model. Did he follow his target, get to know them in a peculiar way beforehand? A guy in the UK did a peeping Tom routine for weeks before the actual deed, said in his confession that killing was the ultimate intimacy, so it was essential he was close to the victim. Charming. Dorothy strolled in just as I was feeling eyes on the back of my neck. Maybe I'd been sitting too long, staring too obviously. Green, good colour, she said in greeting, referring to the shirt I'd worn so she could recognise me. My sister, she green. I offered a cup of tea. Colour needs to be noted for its individual and cultural significance, not just its aesthetic, I thought as I brought the pot back to our table. Interesting, because one of the commonalities the police had failed to notice was that each of the victims was wearing a shirt or blouse which was either red or had red on it. Red? I asked Dorothy. She considered, sucking her tea, nodding. You know talk cure? She replied. Psychoanalysis? Yep, him that one. Think red. Keep saying things. Follow path in head. Shit, I thought. Am I just a prejudiced gab, or is it indeed weird to have a 70-year-old Anangu woman telling me, a white psychologist, to use the method of word association from Freud's talking cure? The interview continued like this. My questions felt inept, but Dorothy treated each one with respect. She had soft eyes and a sharp wit, spent the past 30 years trying to get education for her people, and had a daughter who was a health worker and liked to attend conferences on Indigenous mental health. Some woman, this one. At the end of an hour, we came back to colour. Think red, she advised. Outside, red was everywhere. Red was earth, sand, dust, sunset, sunrise, blood. The blood of life, of Rue killed and a feast to follow. Red gave succour. Was it death? No. Death blood dried brown. I paced the murder site. Red was the rock too, of course. If you wore red, you wouldn't be so easily seen from below. Did this have meaning? I hung around while a busload of German tourists, an echo tour group with a cacophony of accents, and about a dozen walking groups went by, all with sweat hanging from their eyelashes. From here, I couldn't see the road to suss whether the Land Cruiser had reappeared. It was August since the place had last been roped off as a murder scene. Was it about to happen again? Towards sunset, everyone cleared out, heading for where the whole rock could be viewed, morphing spectacularly from red to purple to black. I remembered sunset over Uluru as seductive in its beauty, but today I took the opportunity to be alone at the base. I stared up, peered into caves, crannies, dips, scuffed around the edges of paths. The cleanliness was remarkable. One tissue, no other waste, then a bone. I picked it up, dusted it off, and shoved it into the long pocket of my cargo trousers. I could just about feel the spirits of the ancestors watching me and could only hope they'd understand what I was doing. The hotel in the manufactured resort town was comfortable. I'd brought my bathers and was pleased to find a pool with a lap lane of sorts. Back and forth, twist, turn, back again. I ignored the soft whistle of the bloke with tattoos when I got out. In my room, I looked at the bone and thought about red. The red coat of a dingo. Each time there'd been a killing, a single dingo bone was found among the small amounts of debris somewhere near the site. Natural enough, perhaps, but dingoes and death at Ayers Rock have a poignant history. Azaria Chamberlain was the link. Despite the talk at the time, we knew now her disappearance was not in any way sacrificial. Ritual turned out to be a false lead. So 20-odd years later, we were dealing with a killer who'd made five deaths look like accidents and then like rituals. Was he trying to prove, in a warped way, that Liddy really did it? Or had he been there? Was there guilt that he was assuaging? Did he have something to do with Azaria's death? My stomach threw a fist at me. I hadn't eaten all day. I would think better with some food in me. I turned on the mobile first, seeing as I was back in range. 4 messages from Ray to ring immediately. He didn't sound happy. Jesus, Annabelle, I've been shitting myself. Oh, what are you talking about? Are you okay? What happened? To me, not a bloody thing. Ray's vocal tone became querulous. Did you ring Heinrich and ask him to come down there to meet you? Did I what? You heard, did you? I thought about the Land Cruiser. Could the driver have been Heinrich in hat and sunglasses? Not in a million years. Wasn't he at work with you all day? Yeah, for the morning. I came back from after lunch to find a message on my desk, which was Heinrich saying you'd rung, it was urgent, and he'd gone. Like I said, I've been shitting myself ever since. Ray didn't have a decent proposition for why Heinrich would risk such a blatant lie. I told Ray about my notion I'd been followed. Not Heinrich, though, given he'd been in the office for hours after I left town. Annabelle, I reckon you ought to get out of there. He paused for a minute. It's too dangerous to drive in the territory after dark. Leave the car and your stuff. Put a hat on and some different clothes and go check into one of the other hotels. Sales in the desert, it's the swankiest. Department will foot the bill. I'm on my way. I'm a big girl. I can handle this. It's just as bloody dangerous for you to drive. There are cattle and camels and roos running amok. Maybe one will get Heinrich. Maybe he's innocent. Go home to Marcia. I really mean it. I'm less than 100 k's from you. I left 40 minutes after Heinrich. Bloody mobiles. You can be ringing from anywhere. I did a quick calculation based on Ray's timing. Heinrich had to be very damn close. Okay, I'm going to hang up and change. Meet me in an hour. Okay, see you at sales. No, I'll call with the location. I rang off. Sure, I trusted Ray, but you can never be certain who's listening in. It was a police phone, after all. Red. A dingo's bone. A mad copper. Is copper red? Yes. Was Heinrich the killer? Not my gut feeling, but unlikely his alibis had been checked. I wish I didn't feel that wearing a skirt was my best disguise. It made me feel vulnerable. The sound of yet another bus passing outside, then a car, a big car, slowing, stopping. This hotel was an odd design, with the bathrooms on the outside wall, no windows from the bed sit area. I slunk into the bathroom. Yep, I couldn't see the plates, but I'd bet my mother's wedding ring it was the Land Cruiser. The lined curtain was partly pulled. I crammed myself against it. The man in the cruiser was lit by a street light. He was surveying the rooms, his movements suggesting calm, loads of self-control. The sort of control you'd need if you were going to follow a fellow being up a climb nearly as steep as Everest, then thrust a knife in their neck and shove them over the edge without being noticed. The killer's outside my window, I said when Ray answered my call. I'm still not sure it isn't Heinrich. Same kind of body. Tall, looks lithe. Expletives hissed down the phone. And advice. I was just about hyperventilating, but I was going to get through this. There were people everywhere. If I got outside and at the same time kept out of the bastard's way, I'd survive. But I wouldn't say unscathed. He was still sitting, watching. Listen, I whispered. The link is the Chamberlain case. Do you have a list of the people who camped near Azaria's tent that night? Ray knew me better than to argue about distractions. Well, there's some sort of list, incomplete match. couple of families close by had a bit to say. He couldn't help himself. What the fuck are you asking me this for now? Well, my hunch is that if you match that list with the single males who've been working in the area for the past 6 or so years, or maybe driving trucks through, you'll find a name. Someone, or maybe even a kid, who was there on the 17th of August 1980 and who's come back, either riddled with guilt or anger. He believes the dingo story, that's why the bones. Something to do with Azaria not being saved. Red dust blew across the cruiser outside. The man picked up a mobile. I shuddered. If he had backup, I was in serious trouble. As he put it down and began to get out of the car, I started to move. I needed to be in public view, attracting attention, and fast. As I hit the street, I heard feet pounding the pavement. Heinrich appeared, just about frothing at the mouth. 20 seconds later, it was like a bushfire had jumped the road. Screeching sirens, the thud of fists and bodies falling, staff and tourists slapping into each other, kids taking no notice and being screamed at by their parents, and shouts of, "Police! Police!" Just like in the movies, I shoved myself through the crowd. Heinrich was holding his lookalike on the ground and spitting orders to the security guards who joined him. When he finally saw me, he grinned. "Cheers," he said. "You led me to him." It turned out Heinrich was indeed overly ambitious and an asshole. He'd seen the connection with Azaria, and he'd also been right about the killer being more or less local. So he leaned on Ray to invite me up and spread the story of my past success and my imminent arrival as widely as he could. In the territory, word of mouth is highly effective. He'd been kind enough to try to keep me in Alice in the hope of catching the killer there. Great. I was right too. Jason Trevally had been a kid in the camping ground the night Azaria disappeared. Probably would have had no effect on him, except that he found out several of the campers had seen the dingo, but never told the police, including himself and his father. The campers dispersed, but he kept hold of the names and addresses, tracked those who moved house. Over the past 6 years, he'd driven trucks through the territory, arranging to meet them one at a time, a kind of purging reunion, he'd said, for our crime of silence. At a safer time of year. "We're red," he told them. "That way we'll know each other and blend with the rock of life." The apparently accidental deaths received little coverage interstate. When I came along, he only had one victim to go. Jason Trevally was to meet his father at the rock this solstice. The worst of it was that the Trevally name wasn't even on the police files, so without me as bait, he might never have been caught. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback, and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au, and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creators.